So the summer is over. If you live in Glasgow, it certainly is. Summer is over. I think we talked about weather last week, Matthew, so I'm not going about that. The summer is over because the football season is about to start. A week ago, I was hoping that the football season could possibly start in about 3-4 weeks' time, because I just couldn't be bothered with the negativity that I was expecting to be on the first day at Celtic Park. Not quite there. So, Matthew, are you looking forward to the start of the season?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we spoke about this last season. I always look forward to the start of the season. Otherwise, what's the point? If you're being completely honest, look, last season, is there problems with the board? Yes. Have we still got the number of players that we want? No. Will there still be substantial changes both in and out over the coming weeks? Yeah, I mean, we still don't know. But the honest answer is, if you're a football fan, it doesn't matter what team you are. You know, it doesn't matter if you're Celtic hoping to win the league again. It doesn't matter if your Hearts or Rangers wanting to make it a bigger challenge. It doesn't matter if you're, you know, like, you know, St Johnstone looking forward to the first season back. It doesn't matter what it is. Everyone always looks forward to the start of something new. And there is a little bit of me. Like, last season, whilst there's perfectly valid reasons to criticise the board and continues to be reasons to challenge it, I felt a lot of the time last season it was like people losing their minds. You know, last season, even when we won a double, there were still some people like, this is the worst season ever. And I know there's this tendency of, if you're our age and so on, speaking as the youngest person in this conversation.
Yes. But,
albeit someone who can see 50 in the horizon, you know, they're not too distant.
Stephen and I looking at it in the rear view mirror, Matthew.
But I think the point is that I think, you know, if you win a double and you're still saying this was absolutely terrible, I think football's not for you. That isn't to say that we shouldn't challenge. That isn't to say we shouldn't have expectations. But yeah, you've always got to be optimistic. You've always got to see what's coming ahead. And I think one of the things that makes it interesting is uncertainty in that regard. You know, if you tell us now this will be your results for every game of the season, well, whilst you might clean up at the bookies, otherwise you're going to have a fairly boring experience. The whole point is you're meant to not know what's going to happen. You want to be as strong as you can. You don't want to put yourself in a weak position. But yeah, as ever, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to see the new players we have signed. And hopefully, I'm looking forward, including potentially on Monday, seeing other new players as well. But time will tell about that.
Time will tell. Saint, have you worked out what number season is this for you, attending Celtic?
First game is in 72, so that's over 50 years now. But I suppose I didn't start going on a regular basis until probably about 76. So this is probably the 50th season in terms of being a regular attender at games. In those days, we didn't have season tickets. You just turned up on spec. If it was a big game like a Rangers game, for example, then you had to buy a ticket in advance in the old-fashioned way. I would say this is probably the 50th season, which is crazy to think about. It just isn't kind of contemplate.
My wife's getting more annoyed with me because I'm starting increasingly to put things in context about things like that. So I'll then start to think to myself, God, that would be like speaking to someone in 1976 and they say, first full season was 1926.
Jimmy McGrory was at centre forward.
One of my friends talks about it's one of these things, again, just as you say, but he remembered a specific instance. He vividly remembered he used to go on one of the buses that goes from Elton Campsie or Kirkintilloch. And he says, I always remember in about the mid-ish 80s when he'd been a teenager, sitting with these old guys who were talking about the sort of the World War II era, you know, and a little bit before that. And he says, and it was literally just last season, you know, he says, I was sitting with these, you know, young boys now on the bus, and I was talking about Love Street in 86, and he thought, God, that is effectively, you know, he says, I remember when the guys for the, you know, talked to me about the 1940s, I just sort of thought, you know, how did you get there? Did you take your dinosaur to the games with you? Because it just felt like so long ago. He says, and it was just when I suddenly went, God, that is the exact time gap that we once had. So I suppose that comes to us all the longer you go.
Yeah.
So are you looking forward to your 50th full season going every game, Saint?
Well, I have to say, I'm a big fan of the close season because I think you need to recharge the batteries. And, you know, at the end of last season, I can't remember, I really need to think about this, I can't remember a time where I was so euphoric at the end of a season. Because we had that. Was it just a Hearts game at the end of the season? It was the drama of the Rangers game when Maeda scored the overhead kick. It was the drama of Fir Park when we get the late penalty. It was the drama of the Hearts game and everything it entailed. We're not going to get through all that again, obviously. And then with the cup final, which was a bit of an anticlimax in some ways, but a professional job was done. So you get into the end of the season, you win the double. And I heard Matthew saying there that, you know, people maybe complain that last season's a bad season. I think we need to admit it was pretty grim in parts, and we need to make sure that we're not as bad as that again, and that we do improve, so that this season is a wee bit more, dare I say, a wee bit more entertaining. I mean, fans will be, some guys will be out there listening to this going like that. They've won the double, they've got 14 leagues out of 15, and he's asking for entertainment. But anybody who watched this last season, I think, will know what we mean by that, because there was times it was quite turgid, and it wasn't good to watch. And there was a lot of bad performances in there. And if it hadn't been for O'Neill coming back the second time, then goodness knows we could have finished third or fourth. The good news, if you like, is that we're on the right road, I think, in terms of the signings. I'm quite excited about the players that they were bringing in. I think we're looking in the right directions, and we're paying good money for established quality players. These guys are no projects now. These guys are coming in and they're ready to hit the ground running, hopefully. So, yes, to answer your question, I'm quite excited. And just as you said, more excited now than I was 3 or 4 weeks ago. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, genuinely, Matthew, last Saturday, I was thinking, I normally, you know, like you love the season to start and all that, but I was thinking, oh, I just can't be bothered with the negativity that there's going to be because we've not signed anyone. This hasn't happened. And players have gone because Maeda's gone. It's amazing how just one transfer, looking online as well as myself, and I'm not saying that's the panacea and that's us fixed, but Matthew, it's amazing how one transfer seems to have completely changed the mood of the supporters.
Yeah, I mean, I think if we're going to do glass half full, glass half empty, I suppose what you might say to the board is, it's great, you know, we've gone and signed two players, you know, 17 million, it's obviously hard to tell, you'll have to wait and see how they actually do, but Duran's got off the sort of scoring mark at the start, which is positive. I think, you know, there's always that psychology, maybe it's the Tony Cascarino memory, but, you know, I think there's always that element that the longer it takes you to get a first goal, the more that, well, obviously, the more that you're ultimately going to potentially be seen as a failure. Equally, I mean, have we decided now a pronunciation for Casper, or we're just going to call him Casper? But who it seems to be?
Who? Almost with this, like, Loch, a bit more silent at the end.
So, you know? However we pronounce him, though, I mean, this is, in many ways, I think this is the biggest signing of intent that we've made for, and maybe it's no accident that this is O'Neill's taking as proper manager, you know, proper manager. But I think this is the biggest signing we've made since somebody like Chris Sutton, perhaps. The only potential other than that would be, in my view, Scott Sinclair, just because that was a real signing. I mean, I know we signed Engels, and I know Engels cost a lot of money, but I think, you know, Engels still felt a bit like potentially a project, even though it was obviously a lot of money at the same time. But I think the last time I remember that we went out and said, major money, and this is a really, really big player, somebody that we, you know, we expect is obviously going to be first choice and is hopefully going to be transformative. I genuinely think we're going back a quarter of a century to O'Neill's arrival. And if it goes as well as O'Neill's first proper season did, then it's going to be a great time, especially given that Rangers are coming to Celtic Park early on, albeit this is a different club now.
Saint, your thoughts on the fact that we went out and spent, well, whatever the figure is, somewhere between 11 and 12 million, somewhere in that bracket, on a guy who's scored Champions League goals on a regular basis and is not 19, 18?
Yeah, I think in this occasion, most fans will be happy with the board for splashing the cash, in as much as you said there, this guy's an established player, he isn't a project. He's got a pedigree, scored in the Champions League. And to be honest, he's the best that we can hope to get because somebody playing in the top five leagues who scored Champions League goals, very unlikely that they're going to want to come to Scotland, no matter how much money we're going to want to pay them. I'm also a big fan of Scandinavian players. I think that the Swedes and the Norwegians and the Danes have got a great work ethic. They're very, very professional. They learn a lot. Probably his English is better than mine's even at the moment before he comes. And they're also, I don't think Scandinavian, obviously, with the weather they get, they're not going to be phased, because it's not like the southern Europeans who maybe come here and think, you know, once you get to October, it just turns black in Scotland for the next 6 months. So from that point of view, he seems to tick all the right boxes. The hope is that he just fits into the system. My one worry is, and I haven't seen anything of him, I couldn't tell you anything about him, because I deliberately don't watch YouTube videos, because I've tried that a couple of times and I was dead disappointed when they signed the players. So I'm past that. I don't want to do that. We signed Harold Blackback, but when Rosenberg had a really good run in Champions League campaigns in the late 1990s, and the problem with Harold was he was a good striker and he'd pace, but he couldn't play with his back to goal, and he was used to playing on the break and getting teams running into space. And when we play against teams in Scotland, the 38 games that we play, probably 34 of them are going to be against a packed defence of some degree. Harold just couldn't, it wasn't his game. He was lost playing with his back to goal. He didn't know what to do. He kept looking for space to run into, and there wasn't any. So I'm optimistic about this one, but I'm a wee bit concerned as well about the system that Bodo Glimt play, that he's used to playing. I'm hopeful that he can accommodate his playing style to suit ours, but it might be a wee bit difficult in the early days.
I don't know about you, but the impression I got about why, one of the reasons why it sort of lifted the mood of the fans, not just that we've gone out and spent £17 million on two strikers. I think what that's done is given people hope and expectation that it's an indication that we will be spending money on other players in the window, that you don't feel so reticent of, well, all these players might go out, but there's no evidence based on our last window that they're going to bring somebody in to replace them.
Mm-hmm.
Am I reading too much into it, or do you think that's also a reason why people are positive?
I think the reason why people are positive, and I mean, is that last season's summer transfer window, it was disastrous. It was awful, because we never signed anybody of any great standard. And then at the end, we basically bottled it and bought players in a rush who weren't good enough. And I stand by that. I think both Tonecki and Balakwisha, £10 million worth. I'd be very surprised if both of them are still there at the end of August, because I think O'Neill will look to offload them. So I think that's the reason for the optimism. Hopefully we've learned our lessons from the last transfer window, and maybe we're getting a wee bit better at closing deals off as well. Because, you know, was it Dolberg last year from Ajax, who I quite fancied on the face of it. And then we let things go, couldn't get the deal. And then the next minute, he goes somewhere else. So he went to Ajax, rather.
Yeah, he went from Ajax. To be fair,
Ajax. And it all worked out well for him. So he's in a wee bit of limbo now. But who knows? It could have worked for him here, because not every transfer works. And just because you've had a bad spell in one club doesn't mean to say you would have a bad spell at Celtic. But hopefully the board have learnt the lesson in a whole number of ways.
I mean, to be fair on that one, we agreed everything with him on a Saturday night. And it was agreed in writing back an email. And then, you know, we sent him through flight times. And then the Sunday morning emailed to say, or his agent emailed to say, his wife doesn't want to come to Glasgow. Who can blame her
for looking
out the window? And actually on that bit of negotiation, just before we start the podcast, I was just saying to Matthew, the biggest challenge when you do the podcast is when you try to say, maybe this is the reason, maybe that is the reason. Instead of what you're trying to do is just guess at stuff, people then think that that's your personal opinion on it. I mean, maybe one of the challenges is, I understand on the German, Matthew, the issue there is we go away, our scouting staff engage with agents and they engage a wee bit with the club, and you get to a point of, you decide this is the player and you've got some parameters around which everybody thinks a deal can be finalised, a rough wage parameter, a rough purchase price parameter. I understand on the German that for once it's not our fault, that they've got a sporting director who's 30 years of age, who's wanting to be Mr. Billy Big Balls. And whilst everything was agreed in principle that it would be somewhere in the region of 4 million, that every time we come in with an offer, it goes up. And it's not always our club's fault on these types of things.
No, I mean, I don't know the ins and outs, obviously. But no, I think the honest answer is, what we actually need to do is make sure we're not a club that's thought of negatively. The whole point is, right, I think sometimes a bit like if people play Championship Manager a lot, or if people just have no consequence, it doesn't matter whether it's about football or anything, everyone's great at pontificating on how everyone else should do their job, and especially simplifying the difficult aspects. Oh, you should just do this, you should just do that, which is all very well if you're not the ones that actually have to do it. With players or with football clubs, that you can't, as much as people may well like to, you can't just sort of live in your own little bubble. If a sporting director starts to get a negative reputation, starts to be, this is somebody that you isn't really particularly, I'm not saying this is the case, but isn't somebody you can engage with, you know, it's going to, you know, you're going to have significant obstacles if you try and get a deal through them, then in the long run, what happens is you don't attract players, because players say, well, if, you know, one of the reasons, let's be honest, again, somebody who's coming to Celtic, who's not Scottish, doesn't see us as the pinnacle, and almost certainly, you know, if a player is coming to us, they're looking at us as, I can go to that club, it's big crowds, I can hopefully win something, I can play in the Champions League, I can put myself in a window, and that's just, you know, common sense. Daisen Maeda did not grow up, you know, in Japan, dreaming of the day that he got to come to Glasgow's East End and pull on the hoops. He just didn't. Neither did Henrik Larsson, and neither did any other, pretty much any other foreign player you can possibly name. So they're coming because they have a certain expectation, which is why I'm always of the view, within reason, the deal has to be right for Celtic. But this whole idea, you keep players, just isn't a great idea. And not even so much for if you keep a player, a bit like Maeda, frankly, at the start of last season, you keep a player against their will, then they don't play as well and they're angry. But you also send a signal to other players, don't go to that club. They don't hold it. And so in the case with the German one, will there be other clubs that can get a negative reputation? Yeah. Do we have a negative reputation? That may well. I know that that's often chatted about. Whether that's literally the case in the boardrooms around Europe, I don't know. But if the stories about, you know, the difficulties dealing with the German club are true, it's unfortunate for us in the short term. It's also unfortunate for his own club, because the reality is that over time, if clubs start saying don't deal with them, then players start saying don't sign for them. And I imagine that if you're better players that you want to sign, don't sign, you don't keep a job as a sporting director for too long.
No. So on the wider thing, we brought in Duran and we brought in, or however, and Casper. So saying, excluding the fact that we expect people to go, right? Excluding that, because we won't know for certain who comes and who goes. We can expect players to go. We expect Engels to go, pretty certain he will. We expect Negren to go 50-50. We expect Hatate to go, you know, but you can't be certain. If you just park as the squad is just now, what other positions would you like in the next few days? Would you like us to, or maybe in the next week or two, what other positions would you like us to try and get players in for?
I think the big problem we had last season stemmed from the midfield. And I've said for a number of years now, even under Ange, that we need more physical presence in midfield. Certainly not in the Scottish game, because in the Scottish game, I mean, 14 titles out of 15 tells everything. But I do feel that if we're going to make a mark in Europe, that when we get into Europe, even though the big teams in Europe have what they call a holding midfield player, somebody whose job is to stop the opposition in the middle of the park, protect the back four. And there was a good case in point years ago when we had Lennon and Lambert, when we did particularly well in Europe. Because Lennon and Lambert, their job was to protect the Celtic defence, and they were very good at it and very successful, as the European results at that time indicate. So what we'd like to see is we'd like to sign a big forceful player, somebody who's got strength, muscle, pace, somebody who will get in and maybe help McGregor in midfield, because I feel, again, especially in Europe, Callum McGregor gets overrun and big gaps appear, because Callum by nature isn't a defensive minded player. He's always looking to keep possession and maybe drive the team forward. And then our other midfield players like Engels, Hatate, McCown, Bernardo, these guys are all forward-playing players as well. None of them are tacklers. None of them are basically in there in order to stop the opposition. Yeah, as I've been advocating for a wee while, I would love to see us sign a Victor Wanyama type. I know they don't grow in trees, but somebody like Wanyama to get into midfield to help McGregor out and just to assist at the back four, because we're very, very exposed. We were exposed last season in Scotland in numerous games as well. And I think that the defence didn't get the credit that they deserved last season, particularly the likes of Scales and Trusty, who without Carter Vickers played virtually the whole season at centre-back. And they're not an ideal pairing, but I think they improvised and they did quite well. So to answer your question, it's somebody in midfield, absolutely.
Matthew, what positions? I don't know about you. My gut feel is that we might not let anyone else go until the Champions League campaign is over. So if that was the case, what positions would you like us to try and get in between now and then?
I don't know about the timing, but I think everyone expects Engels to go. I think I said last week, I think Hitati's time is done. And I wouldn't be sorry to see him move on. Not that he's not been a great player, but I just think everybody, you know, everything has their time. I think instantly, therefore, that you are losing two important midfield players. So, like Stephen says, again, I think the phrase, you know, they don't grow on trees is obviously true, but a midfielder in the style of Wanyama would be brilliant. Wanyama was an outstandingly good player. He wasn't just strong, though. He was a technically very good player, you know, and not just in Scotland, but in Europe, he was a really, really significant player. So certainly somebody in that style we would like to see. We still need a winger. You know, the reality is James Forrest is, as it stands, going to be our top winger. Now, Tonetke may well step up. Jan, you know, actually had not a bad season last season. The return of Jota, I just don't think we'll ever see Jota back at Celtic. Even if we do, I hope I'm wrong, but I don't think he'll be what he was. So, you know, if you look at that, do we have an actual definite, these are our wingers? If you go back to the days of, you know, of Ange and the hype and before, you know, so there was a period where Jota and Maeda were going to play in the front three. That was just, there wasn't any question that was, we knew that was what was going to happen. I don't know if we've actually got that just now. I don't think we've got, depends on the system O'Neill's going to play. I mean, that's the other question mark. But if we play something similar, even if we move towards a 3-5-2, you know, more of perhaps in line with what O'Neill did in his first season, I don't know if we've got necessarily the ability to, if we wanted wingers, to use those. So I probably wouldn't be against that. My other thing is, Carter Vickers has been a great signing, but it's not totally dissimilar to the Jota situation of increasingly you can't rely on him for reasons of fitness and injuries and so on. I would like a definite centre-half partnership, you know, that we know, I know you can't predict injuries and all the rest of it, but I would like a, do you know what, we can pretty much guarantee that for 80%, certainly the big games, for 85% of the big games this season, we know these are our two big centre-halves. And the thing is, if we were going to go down the 3-5-2 route, which was more in line with what O'Neill did the first time, we actually need another centre-half in any case. So I would like a, you know, a Wanyama-style holding midfielder and a centre-half. Those are probably the two things I definitely want. I would like more wing options as well. I know we've been linked with various people. There's obviously Arthur that just been spoke about just now, and obviously Hassan has been mentioned as well. If they get over the line, again, brilliant. But I think those are the positions that we certainly need.
So on the signing stuff, I was thinking today, because first of all, I thought to myself, I wonder how Brendan Rodgers is feeling being given a Honda Civic to drive last summer. And this summer we go out and spend £17 million on two guys who scored 11 goals in the preceding Champions League campaign. I wonder if he feels a bit frustrated. And then I actually thought about how all the criticism of Michael Nicholson and the board don't spend money. And then I thought, actually, we've spent $17 million this summer. I know we've got money, Ben, but we've paid big money for a player, you know, with Casper at 11, 12 million quid. And there's talk of the German at Paderborn that will probably end up doing some deal at 5 million quid plus add-ons. It's Hassan that's been 4 or 5 million quid. The point I'm making is, actually, from the players that it's been talked about, we spend the money and we have bought a 12 million pound striker. And then I skipped back and thought, and we spent £9 million on Ida and £11 million on Engels and £6 million on Trusty. And then I thought about it going back to Brendan not having the players last summer and Dermot's statement that he made when Brendan left. And there was a lot of talk about Brendan was blocking signings and Tisdale wasn't very good and Brendan only got, apart from Tonetki and Ballatwisha, right on the last day of the window, at 4 or 5 million each. All the other signings were £1 million players, not what we're looking at now. Do you think there's a possibility that actually the club have moved into an era where they spend money on transfers? You know, two summers ago when they spent money on Engels, Ida and Trusty, and this summer they spent it on Hook and there might be others. And last summer was an anomaly. Do you think it might well be that they'd heard that Brendan was maybe starting the process of he was never going to do more than 3 years? And they'd got wind that his agent was speaking to people about where he's going to go, and that Dermot thought, you might actually leave early if you get a decent offer, if you're speaking to clubs in Saudi and we're just not going to give you the money. I think there's a possibility that that was the issue. Anyone?
That's hard to say. The fact that Rodgers walked out and it's the first time would lead you to think that the directors would be a wee bit wary of what he was going to do in future. And if they heard that there was any rumours flying afoot that he was speaking to people or other people were contacting him, it might have made him a bit nervous. But I'd still be disappointed if the last season that we didn't sign a couple of quality players, because no matter who the manager is, you should still be investing in any club. Your biggest asset's in the park. You know, like, what's the old adage? You're better to have 50 million in the pitch than 50 million in the bank, because that 50 million on the pitch will hopefully accrue. And we've been quite good at that through the years. We've signed players, not all of them granted, but we've signed players and we've been rewarded handsomely when we've sold them on for big profits. And we then use the profit to reinvest in the team, no matter who the manager is. And good players are good players, and if managers are going to come and go, then they're going to appreciate the fact that they're coming in there. I mean, Neil must have been absolutely frustrated last season when he came in and saw the standard that he had, you know, when he came in around about October. It was probably the worst Celtic squad in the last 30 years. We didn't have a striker worthy of the name. And I still can't believe that we won the league when we couldn't get a striker barely into double figures. I don't count Maida particularly as a striker. I always thought he was better coming for the left. And then you rely, but what builds us up last season is the fact that Nygren scored 21 goals. Now, he has his failings, and there's areas of his game that he could improve on, certainly. But the fact is, the stats show, without scoring a penalty, he scored 21 goals. That is some addition to our goals tally. And it's very interesting to say that we heard the rumour that today, Brian, a mutual friend who contacted us, to say that he's heard that there's a possibility of getting Matt O'Reilly back loan. And that would be a good sign. If you're looking for a class midfield player, somebody who can pass a ball, somebody who can beat a man, somebody who can get goals, then Matt O'Reilly would be, even on loan for a season, would be a terrific addition.
I wonder whether that was the start of a rumour created by Celtic to try and get Paderborn to come, yeah, and just do the deal.
Possible.
On the German. So that's where we are as a team. There has been Celtic on Instagram, I think it is, have a picture of Jota wearing a Celtic strip, standing on the pitch at Celtic Park. And well, maybe got enough time, because we want to get this back. If there's time at the end about Celtic's update on fan engagement and ask your opinion about that, Matthew. But more importantly, this is the pre-season podcast. So who's going to be where in the key positions in the league, Matthew? Who's going to be the top three? And not specifically the three teams in the top three, but which order they're going to be. Obviously, basically what I'm saying is, who's finishing second and third? who's getting relegated? So, Matthew, you can go first.
I mean, I know it's a bit stereotypical and all the rest of it, but we know who two of the top three teams are going to be. Mm. It's, you know, even last season, I mean, again, we didn't play well for lots of last season and we still won the league. Rangers didn't play well. Hell, Rangers were able to lose five in a row. you know, post-split and still finish in the top three. You've got to... We don't know exactly how Rangers are going to play. It's not rocket science, though. If you look at McInnes' general style, if you look at the players that they've signed so far, you can see a, you know, a very physical, traditional Scottish, the idea, you know, almost the idea of, if you go back to the 80s, the way we used to play in Europe, you know, none of this messing about or anything, you know, just fling it at the box or whatever. Yeah. The stereotype.
Basically what we talked about last week, Matthew,
yeah,
about having an identity, a defined nationalistic style.
Yeah. So Rangers will be one of the top three. Second, third, again, obviously I want to put us as first. So you would put Rangers up there. And I suspect they'll be second, if I'm being honest. I think the interesting thing is, if you look at almost every single other team, now Hearts are an outlier for different reasons. On the face of it, if you are Hearts, who came, you know, literally within minutes of winning the league last season, strangely enough, there was an accident with Hearts last season. There was. Celtic and Rangers were particularly bad. Hearts, you know, had a really good start, obviously then sort of faded away. On the face of it, Hearts should do better, because I think you and I have spoke about this, Brian. We spoke about it on the podcast before. I totally agree with you. I felt that McInnes was never going to be there at Tynecastle come Christmas. Obviously, he's gone to Rangers, but I just had the feeling that having come so close that they would start poorly, and Tony Bloom would go, "You're not somebody I would ever have actually appointed. You know, you are somebody who I've inherited, but I wouldn't have appointed." The new manager is clearly a Tony Bloom appointment, you know, somebody much more fitting in with the analytics idea and all the rest of it. They've not had a great start. As we said, it's a little bit unfair. I'm not, 6-0 isn't brilliant, but Sturmgarts are, you know, are a reasonably good team from a good league. You know, this isn't, again, if they'd lost 6-0 to the Moldovans that, you know, the Kosovans, that Hibs lost to, then that would be different. I think there is a psychological thing for Hearts. If Aberdeen beat Hearts this weekend, I think straight away you look and go, that's three defeats in a competitive defeats in a row. This guy's a dud, you know, and which, you know, we're back to sort of Ian Cathro territory perhaps for Hearts. I think that's the question then. Maybe this guy though has a system in order. He's struggled in Europe. Let's face it, he's going to lose to Benfica. This is again the other reason that Hearts probably have to beat Aberdeen this weekend. Otherwise, you are looking at a massive run probably of defeats, which psychologically it can be hard to overcome. In theory, they are still the team to beat if you want to break into the top three. You know, we are obviously, we start the season as favourites. I would assume Rangers, as I say, will be second or third. So the question is, can you knock Hearts over? And I always think it's, I suppose there's a lot of people in Scotland would be glad of this, but if you take Celtic and Rangers out of things, it is always very difficult to predict. You know, there is always complete outliers. You know, Dundee went through various spells last season of, oh, they've started badly, Stephen Presley's terrible, to, oh, he's actually doing really well. Kilmarnock, obviously, when Neil McCann took over, Neil McCann for Celtic fans is a bit of a pantomime villain, but the idea of Neil McCann's a disaster. He's going to do absolutely terribly. And in the end, you know, he stabilised them and did well. St Mirren, on the face of it, had a great season, you know. Cup final, semi-final, well, not just cup final, winning a trophy, which is obviously the pinnacle you're looking for. Equally, I watched a little bit of Dunfermline beating St Mirren the other day. I honestly think any of them could go up and down. I would probably say, though, we actually said before we maybe weren't going to do a top six. I'll take a top six then.
Right.
Celtic Rangers, probably in the top two. Falkirk, Hearts, Hibs, and Kilmarnock. That's going to be my top six prediction, which may be complete nonsense by the end of the season. Relegation, one of the Saints.
Okay, talking of Saints. And I always think, you know, Matthew's point about there's always a team that has a really negative, everybody thought they were going to do, principally out of the main core ones of Aberdeen, Dundee United, Hibs, Hearts, there's always one of them that does disproportionately poorer than everybody's expecting that season.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time, it's the team that's having to play European football because they've started the season earlier than everyone else on a high level of competitiveness. This is why I always thought, and it's a double-edged sword now for Hearts. Also, it'd be McInnes' problem, as Matthew said, that he would be starting this season, he would lose Champions League qualifiers, he would then maybe lose the Europa League qualifiers, and then because they've started the league early and they've had these extra games and they're now in the Conference League, but they end up having to play weekend, midweek, I thought, nah, he'll be fourth or fifth in October, November, and Tony Bloom will say, you're out, I never fancied you, you're out. The new guy, I think, has now got the problem of Denny McInnes took Hearts to within a few minutes of the title. So the Hearts fans will be the people, my guess is, who'll be saying, you're no Denny McInnes. He nearly took us to the title. And then they've also got that thing of weekend, midweek for football. That's my issue with them, but equally, they should be doing better. What's your thoughts on top six and relegation?
I think the thing that holds us back in Scotland isn't the fact that Celtic and Rangers are too big for Scotland. It's the fact that the three clubs that you always look to provide a challenge is the two Edinburgh clubs and Aberdeen, and they constantly underachieve. Now, you look at the size of the city of Edinburgh, and the one of the financial capitals of Europe, they should be getting more investment. They should be out there within the city seeking more investment to come in. They've actually made progress in terms of the stadiums. Both stadiums, I think, at the moment hold something in the region of 18,000, 19,000. That's good, but see, be quite frank, in a city like Edinburgh with the fan base that they've got, they should be wanting to build a stadium 25,000, 30,000. And that in itself brings you in more money, which would give them more money to challenge Celtic and Rangers. And then you've got Aberdeen. I'm going to steal your thunder here, Brian, because I know you were on for this for a long number of years. Aberdeen are up there in Grampian. They're a one-team city. They've got a huge part of Scotland to themselves. I know the oil industry is not what it was, but again, through the years, they haven't even out and attracted that investment in order to give them somewhere a platform to push on from. So I look at those three clubs, and each season I say to myself, you should be doing more. Not just to make yourself better, but to make the Scottish game more attractive. And in fairness to Hearts last season, stars nearly aligned, because they did have a good start, as Matthew said. They got a bit of momentum behind them. McInnes was a new manager in terms of Hearts. The fans took to him. There was a good rapport. And then on the one side, you had Russell Martin, disaster at Rangers, and it pushed Hearts beyond Rangers. And then we go and blow it by appointing Wilfred Nancy, and Hearts pushed in front of Celtic. As I said, the stars had aligned for Hearts, and if they're never going to, they didn't win the league last season, very, very difficult to see them ever winning a league title, because I can't imagine another season whereby Rangers and Celtic would appoint two such diddies as what they did last season. Every season I look to Hearts, Hibs and Aberdeen and say, come on then, what have you got? And I don't mean that in a condescending way. I mean that in a generous fashion. I want to see Scottish football do better. I want to see more challenge. I want to see better games. We want to go to games and get caught and have competition. Technically, we don't want to go as much as we all want Celtic to win. There isn't any great point in beating Aberdeen 5-0, Hearts 6-0, Hibs 6-0. You really want those teams to provide a challenge and make it more exciting. So in terms of who's going to challenge us, I always look to those three. I do think there's a problem. I saw Matthew talk about Falkirk there. Falkirk and Motherwell were terrific last season, but I do think it's that second season thing that the teams know what to expect now. And Motherwell's got a new manager as well, so I see Motherwell falling away a wee bit. Don't see them getting relegated. But the Falkirk, depending on who they lose, might get relegated. But the team that I have the most worry for is St Mirren, because I know a few St Mirren fans and they're not keen on the new manager. He doesn't have the background, or he doesn't have the charisma to inspire them that they're going to have a good season. And I've noticed that the results in the League Cup weren't the greatest. So I wouldn't be surprised if St Mirren began to struggle and he's the first manager who gets bumped, and then St Mirren go for a more experienced name.
You both, so who's in your top six? One of the things I think will be interesting this season is how Kilmarnock do without their AstroTurf pitch and being back on a grass pitch, in terms of does it give them, or does an AstroTurf pitch give them the advantage? So who's your top six for you, Saint?
Celtic, Rangers, I know I'm stating obviously, Hearts, Hibs, Aberdeen, and if there's going to be a surprise package, then probably Dundee. I think Presley did do well last season. I think he might be able to build in that. And it wouldn't be beyond expectations if Dundee finished sixth.
All right, so that's your top six. Circling back round then to Celtic, Matthew, my concern was large chunks of last season were not enjoyable, not just because the team wasn't performing, just because of the general anger. And I'm not saying anybody was wrong or right on it. It's a matter of fact. It was just at times there wasn't a feeling of joy as there should be going to Celtic games. And my concern was that, you know, we were going to start with the statements that had come out, we were going to start at that level. I don't know if either of you have had the chance to see tonight that Celtic have come out with the fan engagement element. Now, obviously, last week, Matthew, we talked a lot about how signing players is an essential. But if you don't have a decent PR strategy around that and a decent messaging strategy, it's not. So what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I suppose it's a bit like a new signing. The proof of the pudding will be in the playing, or will be in the eating, or whatever the case may be. Yeah, I mean, we've been saying this for a long time. I think that we play up the whole idea of, you know, the more than a club aspect of Celtic, and that's fine. I mean, that is a really, really important part of things, and of course, every club pays lip service to how important their supporters are. It doesn't matter whether you're playing junior football or, you know, whether you're Real Madrid or Barcelona. You know, nobody comes in and sort of says the fans are all terrible. And if they do, it's usually because they're about to be edged out the door. So there is obviously a massive fracturing. We can see that there's a huge fracturing between Celtic and the supporters. We've had the financial, the Not Another Penny campaign. We've had numerous protests. We've just had the general anger. You can even see it with the attendances that were at, you know, the last 2 weekends. If you compare, for instance, the Newcastle game last season to these two, you know, there's clearly a big split between the supporters and the club. And I don't want to go over it too much again, because we spoke about it in a lot of depth last season. I personally think that a big catalyst of that was COVID. And I think, you know, we spoke about other issues as well. So for a long time, I think the club has had, because it's always the club has, the fans can't take a step towards the club. It has to be the club takes a step towards the supporters. So appointing a new, you know, fan engagement, I think on the face of it, it can be a great idea. If it leads to something, though, that's what we don't know. You know, I think it's a little bit like in politics. We'll have an inquiry. That's great. That's genuinely important. Inquiries are important, and they're more important than people, I think, sometimes think. But an inquiry is great if at the end of it you say, here's the 3 or 4 things that we are going to do substantially differently and properly that will genuinely improve lives. So it's the same here. I think in theory it's a great idea. It's John Paul Taylor, isn't it?
Who yeah, it is, yeah, JP.
And you know, I mean, John Paul is a good guy. He's clearly, you know, somebody who is on supporter sides, wants to do it. I always feel sorry for him, because you constantly see him getting tagged in Twitter posts where people are saying, we hate the board and we want you to agree with us. And you think, you know, he's not going to do that. You know, a manager of Tesco might be annoyed at them, but he's probably not, if he wants to keep his job, going to post something saying how terrible Tesco are and how you should go to Asda instead. So with John Paul, it's the same. John Paul has been around for a long time. If he is given an opportunity, you know, if this is not just you know, window dressing, if the club is actually going to say to him, look, we know we need to make changes, we want to see substantial plans, we want to see things that will actually allow the fans to engage, then I think it could be a great thing. I made a joke last season. You said, Brian, about, you know, it's really difficult to predict how the league will turn out, and how do you think, and I think you actually were talking about the transfer window, you know, how's the transfer window looking? And I said, come back and ask me in 6 weeks. With this, come back and ask me in 3 years, because we might be saying it was a great thing, or we might be saying, remember that thing that didn't really make any difference.
Saint, do you sense that the club are making baby steps towards the fans? Signed, we spent money of a decent amount in the transfer window. We've then put out this statement about the appointment of John Paul Taylor, and fan forums are going to be touring around the country. You see attempts to try and have a situation where this season is less antagonistic than last?
I would genuinely hope so, because one of the main reasons we did win the league, and I really mean this, was that in the last 5 or 6 weeks of the season, everybody, there was a united front. I know it wasn't perfect, right, but in general terms, there was a united front, and the atmosphere in the home games, especially towards the end of the season, was part of the reason why we got over the line when we beat Rangers and we beat Hearts. It's an interesting thing to note that talking about anniversaries and stuff, this is Celtic Underground's 20th year, is that right?
No, this is our 21st season coming up.
I thought it was 2006.
Yeah, so it was 2006, but it was our 20th, but this then makes this our 21st season.
Okay, so roughly 20 years. So the point I'm trying to make here is, you know, I was then at the beginning, I came a couple of years later, you and Eddie Pearson were the instigators in the early days. And, you know, I know that when we've done this website and done the podcast for many years, we do it for enjoyment, right? There was never an idea that somehow we were doing it to get a bigger say with Celtic or somehow get a seat in the board or whatever mechanism.
You couldn't pay me to go on the board.
What's that?
I said you couldn't pay me to go on the board.
I don't mean the board. I'm just meaning...
Not because I hate the board. I just think it would be... You'd never win. Anyway, just carry on.
I'm talking about a fans forum or some sort of vehicle that there's an involvement with fans. That was never our thing. But as time has passed by and you get more of the Celtic websites, more of the podcasts, I think there's a wee sense of entitlement when people begin to organise a podcast or a website and they say, look, we've got so many subscribers and we've got so many followers and that kind of thing. Therefore, we think we should, there's a sense of entitlement there that they think somehow that they should get a bigger say. When we started doing the fans' engagement with the press conferences, I actually thought that was a good thing. And then through time, I began to think it's maybe not such a good thing, because those guys who are going there almost become the establishment within Celtic, and they see themselves somehow as being better than everybody else. So I don't know what we're going to do. As Matthew says, the proof's in the pudding. We'll need to wait and see what comes here. But I do think that there are certain demands from certain areas. In the old days, it was the Supporters Association. And then in 1986, they started the affiliation, which was a breakaway from the Supporters Association. And those organisations were Celtic's main contact with their supporter base. But now you've got so many factions. You've still got the association, still got the affiliation, you've got the Irish supporters, you've got all the websites, you've got the podcasts. There's so many people out there with a vested interest who all want to be the main sort of contact that the club have. And I think that's difficult for the club, because you've got a collective, and then you've got the protests for last season as well. You've got the Green Brigade, you've got the boys in terms of the ultras. There's so many different factions out there who have all got a different way of thinking things and doing things. And I think that's a difficulty for the board, trying to keep all those factions satisfied and happy at the same time. It's almost an impossible task.
So I'm conscious of the time. As Matthew, as you quite rightly say, I think the proof will be in the pudding. I'm hopeful that it's a step forward. Celtic move, as we talked about last week, Celtic move at a slow pace. In an ideal world, what we said tonight about an improvement in fan engagement and appointment happens in June, but it doesn't. Celtic moves slowly. So I'm hopeful that we sign some more players, that engagement develops, and we can just turn up, watch the football, enjoy it, and enjoy Champions League football. So we'll get on to Champions League football preview and so on. And I just want your predictions for the score against Dundee on Monday night. Matthew?
Well, I mean, it's hard to know. You know, Stephen just said, you know, Dundee, his prediction to make top six. I would think full house, as it will be at Celtic Park. The flag day, obviously, you know, so there's a general good mood. It could have been problematic, but I think that the fact that we're going to have at least two I'm presuming we'll have two competitive debuts, at least, I mean, there's still time in theory to add.
I wouldn't be surprised if the chairman came in before Monday night.
Yeah,
so, yeah, I agree.
So if you've got, let's say at least two, but potentially three or four competitive debuts, especially, you know, big money, I just think that there'll be such a sense of goodwill that I can't really see Dundee doing anything. I mean, obviously, I mean, last season against them in the cup, you know, you're seconds away from going out. Mm. the Scottish Cup, you know. So, I mean, Dundee have shown an ability, plus they beat you last season as well. So, it's not taking it for granted just because, but I think a Celtic team that is much better organised as it's been under O'Neill, with some new signings, with hopefully a sense of, you know, goodwill and good mood around the ground, I would expect Celtic to have a comfortable win. I'll say 3 or 4 nothing.
Saint, your thoughts?
3-1 Celtic. And I hope my wish for next season is that we become more of a first half team. And by that, what I mean is, I can't remember a season last season where we were so awful in the first half. The number of times that I met my pal at half time and we're shaking our heads and going, what's going on here? We haven't had a shot and goal in 45 minutes. So I hope that if there's one thing Martin O'Neill brings this season is that we begin to press teams from the start and basically play better, play a full 90 minutes, if you like, rather than relying not only in the 45 minutes, but how many games did we win? And it's great to win in the last minute. It's dead exciting and everybody's happy and it does give you a buzz. But I hope we become less reliant in scoring in the last minute to get winners and we begin to win games with a wee bit more to spare next season and start by doing that on Monday night.
Well, I don't think my consultant would be too happy if we continue to have last minute winners. Anyway, with that, we were going to touch on FIFA, but I'm going to bring it to a close and we'll touch on whether we've just watched the last of a World Cup, maybe on another podcast. Soon find out about that. With that, I will say, I hope your predictions are right and we come to We Beat Dundee. Matthew and Saint, thanks very much.
Ta-da.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
We hope you enjoyed that podcast. There will be more along soon. Please share the joy of Celtic Underground rate us wherever you can find us on your podcast provision, and also subscribe to the CelticUnderground.substack.com. As you'll be aware, there are two types of subscription. There's free subscription where you get a certain amount of content delivered directly to your email address, and then there's a paid for subscription where you get even more content delivered directly to your email address as and when it comes out. Anyway, enough of me. We hope you enjoyed the podcast, and this is me, Harry Brady, saying good night and God bless. Good night.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.